Hello, everybody, and welcome to yet another installment of Super Podcast. I am your host, C3P Marcy, and I'm joined today by two co-hosts. I'll introduce first, Bede the Hutt. Hello, Bede, how are you today?
Oh, ho, 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 ho. That is sad, Marcy. I don't know what I was saying just then. I apologize for that. But yes, hello, Marcy, how are you?
Doing well. How are you, buddy?
Oh, not too bad, not too bad. Just been pretty busy as of late, Marcy. You know, just trying to find that rascal Han Solo across the galaxy. It's so hard work trying to get him to pay back all the money that he owes me.
Yeah, I know. He's a bit of a rascal, that one.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Hence, but once I get him, I'll be going ho, 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 endlessly. So,
Yes, you'll be very happy.
Of course. And I got my best men on it as well, including your...
Maybe you should some carbonite or something.
Yeah, and I've also got your favourite bounty hunter, Bosk, after him as well.
Damn straight. And our other hosts, we are joined by Darth Christopher.
Hello.
Hello. Sounds like you've got a bit of a breathing problem.
Oh, I just had this new life support system installed. It's pretty wizard.
I heard you lost your arms and legs.
Yeah, it was a pain. My former mentor decided to lop off my legs and arm in a fight.
But your new mentor built you a new body.
Yeah, he gave me a pretty new suit. It's black leather, got a cape, got this really wicked wizard looking mask. Mm. It's wizard, man. Wizard, man.
But don't forget you were set on fire as well, because you fell in the lava and stuff.
Well, briefly. Well, I didn't fall into lava. Lava fell onto me.
Mm. And I guess all I could say is, how to get burned, how to get burned, how to get burned.
Impressive.
No.
Most impressive.
That's Darth Vader. I mean, Darth Christopher being very sarcastic.
Yes.
Yes, folks, if you hadn't guessed already, the three of us are here to discuss Star Wars. In this installment, we are discussing A New Hope, The Empire Strikes Back, and Return of the Jedi. In the next installment, we'll be talking about The Phantom Menace, Attack of the Clones, and Revenge of the Sith. So for now, we are talking about the three original films. Three wonderful original films. And the reason for this is because the brand new Star Wars movie is coming out very soon. It's very exciting because it's actually a new Star Wars movie and it's, like, so exciting, man. It's, like, new. It's, like, not in the past. It's in the, you know, the present.
But
I don't
still,
know.
Still a long time ago.
It's still a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away, but we're not in the past. This is going to be new, brand new. We don't know anything about it. People who think they know things about it are stupid. Because, honestly, the trailers and stuff have revealed nothing. You cannot understand a storyline from just clips and blah, blah, blah. They've kept it very secretive. So when we go in, it's going to be like,
it's been an excellent marketing campaign over the last 12 months, basically. You know, bits of information dropped here and there. And it's nothing but your own skepticism to come up with what you think. So, I mean, well done to J.J. Abrams and Kathleen Kennedy, the amazing producer who now owns Lucasfilm, to keep something like this as it was in the past, you know, films in the 90s. You knew nothing about them until you saw them, really.
I much prefer it that way. I don't like the overload of information. Just freaking surprise me.
Yeah.
Yep.
Especially coming from a year when so many of the big summer blockbusters were screwed around with the trailers and the studios were like, we'll just show them the twist in there.
So people complain you're not showing enough. Then you show too much and then they complain.
And
you're never going to make everyone happy.
I know, and then people are demanding that you tell them, like recently Respected people demanded that the last StarCraft movie, people demanded that they tell them who these characters were, and it's like, guys, just calm down.
I'm not going to correct you on calling it Star Crap, because that was a crap movie.
Exactly.
The rest of Star Trek, no.
But we're not focusing on
that.
No,
we're not talking about that. We are talking about Star Wars. And we'll begin by talking about Star Wars Episode 4, A New Hope, from 1977. And I'm going to let Darth Christopher kick us off because he is the Star Wars expert. He is very knowledgeable. And, well, you kick us off. You tell us
about the movie. Look, basically, I just before I start, I want to reiterate, there's a lot of people out there that will, you know, one of the big issues with Star Wars fandom is people complaining about original cuts, special editions, 2004s, and all the editing. I'm just going to put it out there. We are not focusing on those itty-bitty gritty things about, you know, which version's better. Oh, we hate this. George Lucas, you're evil. Because he's not. We're not going to be bitching and whinging about this. We're not going to be doing anything about, you know, focusing on stuff. We will mention, you know, if need be, about, you know, with our own experiences by seeing them now and all in regards to special editions. So we're not going to be doing a comparing and a bitch piece about them, okay? This is, because honestly, if you're someone that watches Star Wars and you go there to just bitch and whinge about, you know, all the changes and the prequels and all of that, then you're really not enjoying it. And, you know, I'm sorry to say, but you're not a fan. You're someone that's just in it for whinging, which is
you're an annoying fanboy.
Exactly. And we're just here to love of Star Wars, and to get your love of Star Wars, you've just got to, you know, love it for what it is. And, you know, yeah, there may be problems, but, you know, that's life. We have no control over that stuff. So we're just here to express our love of this wonderful franchise that's basically dominated, I know, my life since I was probably 4, I'm going to say. But, yeah, so starting off with George Lucas's 1977 masterpiece, Star Wars. Basically, I mean, where to begin? I mean, the origins of that film is just amazing. The fact that George came out of almost obscurity, you know, making experimental films like, you know, THX 1138, which is an expansion of one of his short films at his days at film school, which was a complete dud upon release, but, you know, is an absolute masterpiece, which he then followed up with American Graffiti, which is, you know, a fantastic, fantastic film set in the 1950s. But then to come out of nowhere with Star Wars and the deals that he made, particularly with Fox, you know, here's this young kid that's just come out of nowhere, you know, he's got two films behind him, one very good that got Oscar nominations, one that barely anyone saw. And pitching such a bizarre idea that, you know, the fact that they even signed off. And for those of you that don't know, Star Wars wasn't what it... When Lucas came up with the idea of Star Wars, it wasn't what it is today. It was very, very different. I mean, the closest you'll ever get to seeing the Star Wars, which it was then titled when he first came up with it, is something so different. You've got Han Solo as a giant fish alien. Luke is actually Luke Starkiller, and he's an older man. It's really, really bizarre and out there. And this is the version that Fox signed off on for him to film when they, you know, to give him a budget and to help him out get the film rolling. The closest you'll come to actually seeing that version of the film is last year Dark Horse Comics did an 8-issue limited series, and you can, it's now available in a trade back edition, and it's really, really good. I mean, it feels very quick because it's only 8 issues, but it's very, very good and just a whole nother spectrum of that. But, I mean, the origins of Star Wars in particular are very interesting, and this is, you know, the genius of George Lucas as a filmmaker and what set up a lot of his films in the future. It's basically the most simplest telling, but so genius in its execution of the hero's journey. And that's a formula in cinema that has been copied nonstop, you know, through, but mostly very poorly, you know, with like Harry Potter, other big franchises, you know, The Lord of the Rings and things like that. But Star Wars and George Lucas perfected this journey because not only was he able to apply that formula to the first film, but he was able to apply it as a trilogy into the other films. So in a way, the three films are an expansion of the hero's journey, even though the hero's journey is very summed up in that first film. And he's taken elements of mythology, ancient mythology, you know, the young hero, the young boy who's yearning for adventure, and just by coincidence is kickstarted on an adventure, meets, you know, a mentor, is tried and tested, and then, you know, comes out victorious. And one of the big influences, I don't know if many, many people, not many new fans would know this today, but a massive influence on this original film was the cinema of Japanese filmmaker Akira Kurosawa, particularly the film The Hidden Fortress. And the plot line for The Hidden Fortress served as an influence. Like, you know, it's not like today where someone will say, oh, I saw this film and I basically ripped it off and then I basically remade it. He used it as an influence in terms of character. You know, there are two characters in The Hidden Fortress which are basically, you know, models. They're not based on them. They're models. They've got character traits that basically turned out and become C-3PO. And that character trait is that they are someone, they're not really the main character, although in The Hidden Fortress they're kind of front and center. But they're characters that help kickstart the story. And what Star Wars does very, very beautifully is, unlike what a lot of films do today with constant voiceover, narration, overlook explanation during action, is that Star Wars gives you just enough information, particularly in those opening credit scrolls, which is a reference to, you know, the Flash Gordon serials that George Lucas used to love as a kid. And those, you know, those old 1930s, 40s sci-fi series such as Flash Gordon helped influence not only with Star Wars, but, you know, Indiana Jones series as well. But they had, you know, there were old films back in the day that had these scrolls that would give you the briefest information. And that's what this does. I mean, you know nothing about this universe. You don't know what you're going in for. Like, this was something that, you know, was sci-fi, but nobody knew what it was going to be. And it's the same with this new film. They've created a vibe that's very the same. You know it's got a name. You know it exists, but you don't know what's going to happen. You have no idea what you're going to expect. But we're giving very little information about, you know, a rebellion, a princess, a galactic empire. And then all of a sudden, we're thrusted into this world quite violently in a way, you know, in the middle of a battle. And we're introduced to these two characters, you know, droids, C-3PO and R2-D2. And to be honest, they're not main characters, but for the first 20 or so minutes, they are your guides. They're not your main characters, but they're guides to your starting point of this story, because their story is vital because it helps kickstart the young hero, and in this case, Luke Skywalker's journey to discover who he is. And the traits of the hero that Luke Skywalker has, which is just perfect, is, you know, he's a boy, he's someone searching for answers. He's basically an orphan. He lives with his aunt and uncle. He doesn't know anything about his family. He's heard stories of his father. He dreams of being a pilot. And even though we don't see him doing anything, you know, we don't see him fly a ship until the very end of the film, you know, he mentions pilots, being a pilot. You don't need to see him do that because people have mentioned it. So it's like, you know, even the briefest of mention. This film was also made in a time where people would make the most briefest mention of a character's trait. And you'd be like, oh, okay, this guy's the best bush pilot in the Outer Rim territories. I can believe that. And then you see that once right at the end when he really needs it. Not like in a lot of movies today where they will, you know, spend 10 minutes over explaining why someone can do this or why they're the best or how they got this scar, and they'll go on and you're just like, hurry up, thank you, 3 hours later. So it's a very, very perfect film in just simple heroic storytelling on a grand scale. And, you know, the genius, you know, of this film is that, you know, it's a self-containing story, even though you know, at the time, sequels were not a big thing. You know, it was just, he was this wonderful film that basically raised the bar beyond, you know, it had people thinking, geez, if this guy's out there making films with this type of special effects, I better get a move on. And it's amazing. You've got great, great villainous characters in there, like Grand Governor Tarkin, played by Peter Green. David Prowse is Darth Vader, along with James Earl Jones, who provided the voice. And they're both, the body performance and the character, the voiceover is just brilliant. As the wise mentor in there, who dies during towards the end of the film, as is that character arc, the character type, sorry, of the mentor is to guide you and mentor you, and they usually end up dying. And that's what happens with Ben Kenobi, who's brilliantly played by Sir Alec Guinness. Look, it's a fantastic film, and it's stayed very close and personal to me. My first experience with watching this film, sadly, wasn't on the big screen because, you know, being born in exactly 10 years after its original release date, you know, I didn't know its existence till later in life. But like I said, I was about, I'm going to say 5, maybe 6. And Channel 10 was playing them all on TV, and it just enthralled me. And I was lucky enough, you know, in 97, with the special editions coming out and to celebrate 20 years of Star Wars, to watch them on the big screen again. And I've done so again. And this movie just amazes me at how well it stood the test of time. It's just beautiful. And it's an amazing score. It's just, it works. And again, you know, knowing the backstory behind it, you know, even the production, people had no idea what the hell they were, even the actors had no idea what the hell they were doing. It's like, yeah, whatever, this film's not going to be that great. We'll just say this random shitty dialogue that he's got. And it worked in editing. You know, he managed to get a team of editors, his wife included, that built this fantastic, you know, it's just pure luck that this film was allowed, you know, especially considering it was released through Fox. But it's a classic, it's a masterpiece, and yeah, it's as much as I can really say. I'll pass this over to Marcy 3PO.
C3PO Marcy. Well, after that 3 hours of Chris I probably saw this movie when I was maybe 3, 4, the first time we taped it off TV. So yeah, it was funny, like, rewatching them on tape and having old commercials on there, old logos for Channel 10. But yeah, it became a tradition basically just to watch this plus the others every single weekend. Sometimes even like twice on the weekends, because I was obsessed. Everything was like Star Wars, just Star Wars obsessed completely. Probably from maybe about 6 onwards, it's just pure obsession, just wanting to watch them over and over and over and over and over again. And at that young age, I was completely in love with Han Solo. Completely, I was just like, yep, that's the guy. You know, even at that young age, it's like having a crush on him. But yeah, no, just it really started the whole obsession with Star Wars. And just my memories of it are just really like watching it every single weekend, like constantly. It's like, I want to watch Star Wars, 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 I want to watch Star Wars this weekend, I need to watch Star Wars. That was pretty much my life as a kid. It was all about watching Star Wars just constantly. And then as we got, you know, the special cinema re-releases with extra footage and the new special effects and stuff. I mean, I enjoyed it when I went and saw it. It was really cool to actually be able to see it on the big screen, seeing as I wasn't born when
it was
first
fun.
Came
they made
out.
It really...
It was a good experience. Yeah. They built it up well enough.
And
got
they,
people excited.
Yeah, they treated it as if it was coming out for the first time ever. And that was, 97 was a perfect time, again, 20 years, but it was a perfect time for people that were kind of, you know, like us, born in afterwards. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it was a lot of fun. My dad took me to see it, and yeah, I mean, I absolutely had a blast. I think even like having watched it so many times, just on the big screen, you sort of pick up on things you may have easily missed. I mean, you know, it's just something that was a lot of fun. I mean, to this day, I'll watch that movie several times a year. We've even introduced my niece Lily to it, who had fun watching it. I mean, even now she's quite aware of Star Wars and what it is and how much we love it, and she's learning all the characters. She's told us who we all are, you know, as she does with every movie. I mean, you're this character, that one, and whatever. But yeah, I mean, that my childhood was pretty much Star Wars and Star Trek. So yeah, to say I was a nerd, a sci-fi nerd, is probably an understatement. And there's never been a time in my life where I haven't loved and enjoyed Star Wars. Like, every single year that passes, I mean, I watch it several times. You know, if I was having a bad day, it'd be something I'd pop on and just watch it and enjoy it and still get immersed in that whole universe, the characters, follow Luke's journey. And, you know, it was, like, an amazing day when I actually realised randomly, oh shit, that stormtrooper smacked his head on the door. Never realized that was like something, a mistake they kept in. I just noticed it one day and it was like the greatest thing ever. And it's just funny to watch it again and then you hear that bonk.
Because now they amped up the sound effect.
Of, yeah, it's so much fun. You know, I can just quote the movie constantly. And, you know, it's fun that there's been these hilarious, like, parodies that Robot Chicken have done and Family Guy, and we're often quoting Peter as Han going, great kid, don't get penis-y. Just randomly. But, yeah, that's I guess, my little ramblings on A New Hope. Over to you, Bede the Hutt.
I guess with me with Star Wars, I'm pretty much both in the same boat as you guys. I can't remember exactly when I saw the first Star Wars film for the first time, but I know for a fact that it was when I was a kid, but that's when you know a movie has been a part of your life for so long, when you don't even honestly remember when you even saw it for the first time. And I just remember, just even as a kid, just watching this film and just loving it. And I still, even though I'm 31 years old now, I still love it to this very day, because I rewatched it again recently and it still holds up incredibly well. And it's just, you got characters who are so memorable and dialogue that is incredibly quotable. Some fantastic, you know, sort of scenes and set pieces and memorable characters. And to me, this film would definitely be kind of what they would call a miracle film, because just everything about it just works. And I bet even when George Lucas was even making it, I bet he didn't even realize how much of an impact that this film, well, not only on his own career, but just in cinema in particular. Like, he was the man who basically created the summer blockbuster. I mean, Jaws kind of set up the trend 2 years prior, but Star Wars kind of, when it came out in 77, kind of perfected that. I mean, this was the film where people were, even before they even knew what even was about, like, they were around, there were lines around the block and all that, and people were just anticipated this film, even though, you know, they didn't know anything about it. This was like a brand new property that they've never heard of before. And it's kind of funny looking back on it now, because when you watch all the documentaries on the making of the film, like, even though, yes, 20th Century Fox signed off on the film, it was, what, as before even the film came out, they honestly thought that this film was going to bomb big time and that the film was not going to do well. And because of that, they actually gave all, I think, I could be wrong, so forgive me. They gave all the sort of the merchandising rights to the film back to George Lucas, and I bet they were kind of regretting it.
Ever smartest since. Thing George Lucas ever.
Yeah, that because now changed everything.
He's a freaking billion. He did donate a chunk of money.
But still, it's probably one of the smartest moves ever in cinema. And again, you know, people can whinge and complain about George Lucas, but he is a very smart man. And coming up with that idea, even back then, again, when they did not know what they have, is just top notch.
And the fact that they managed to market toys, action figures for the movie without any bloody action figures is pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Because all you got was like a cardboard thing to say, these are coming out, you're going to get them.
But that's just the magic of the film. And to me, this is a film that, like, maybe 100 years from now, people are going to still very much enjoy, because it still just has that timeless quality about it. Yeah, I mean, it was made in 77, and, you know, I mean, filmmaking back then is very different as it is now, but the film just still has, what astonished me though is just that the film just still has that sort of timeless quality to it. Like, even though he sort of updated it, the films over the years, kind of with more special effects and all that, and I can see why that is, kind of in a way to sort of make sure that they're kind of still in tone with the prequels, since you don't want to make a prequels to
that too. It's not just about keeping it in tone with that. It's also, I mean, when you make something, you kind of look back at it and you think, oh yeah, maybe this, and you know, maybe that, and you know, you could tweak it. But particularly in 97, that was an event. So
yeah,
there was a reasoning behind it. It's like, hey guys, here's something fun.
Yeah, I know. And yes, sure, audiences what they haven't seen before, but also, you know, the prequels were coming out, and you kind of don't want sort of your original films to kind of, at least with their terms of special effects and all that, to look dated compared to what the sort of the ones in the prequels. So they, in a way, they had to upgrade them a bit
more. But even the new effects blend quite well. I remember back in 97 watching, like, you know, figuring out, oh, this is all, that's new, oh, that wasn't in the original. The scene when the X-Wings fly past the planet Yavin just as they're about to assault the Death Star, I always remember sitting there thinking to myself, oh, that was the 90s, that was for the special edition, that was this. And it wasn't until I watched the original cuts, maybe 5 years ago, 6 years ago, for the first time since I've seen them, since I was a kid, that I actually realized, oh wow, you barely touched that one. That shot was still in the original film, with barely any, you know, I mean, I don't know how in depth the touch up on that shot was, but it was like, even, you know, and again, that's how seamless the effects are between now and then, how nicely they gelled it, that it was sort of, I fooled myself into thinking that wasn't in there in the original film when it was. I was just like, oh. But yeah.
Yeah, and you know, it's just a great film, and who would have thought, like, at the time, when I was sort of like getting into films and all that when I was young, I was actually, even though as much as I love Star Wars and all that, and it's one of my all-time favorite films, I was actually kind of shocked when I found out that the film was actually nominated for 10 Oscars, winning 7, and even nominated for Best Picture. That, for me, when I was like 12 or 13 when I found out about that, that kind of blew my mind. And but in the end though, it, regardless of whether it, even though it didn't win Best Picture, to me it has a legacy now, and it's up there as one of the, not only one of the greatest films, but one of the most important films in cinema history. Some people may disagree with that, or say it's because of that, you know, there are some people out there who kind of see Star Wars as kind of like the beginning of, kind of, you know, since summer blockbusters and all that would become the rage after that, we didn't get that sort of quote-unquote sophisticated cinema as we got out of the 70s. But to me, Star Wars has opened up a whole sort of generation of brilliant filmmakers who are working today, like James Cameron, Christopher Nolan, David Fincher, Kevin Smith, and so many others out there who were all inspired by this film to get into making films. So if it wasn't because of this film, not just from a technological standpoint or, you know, filmmaking standpoint, we wouldn't have all these great directors today if it weren't for this film. And in a lot of ways, we all, like, have to be thankful for this film because, I mean, there's so much to say about the very first film, and, I mean, we could easily just do an entire podcast on the first one, but to me, it's just an amazing film that's always going to stand the test of time, like, and people are just going to love it forever.
Yeah, I mean, look, I mean, there's a magic about it, and you could say that's the force at work there. But in my mind, there is no franchise ever, you know, I mean, that can compete with that. I know a lot of people will say there's things today, but I just sit there and say, I'm sorry, but no. But going to move along now to what many people consider to be the masterpiece of the saga, which is The Empire Strikes Back, which was released in 1980 and directed by the late, great Irvin Kershner. Now, again, this was a sequel, and sequels kind of existed back in the late 70s, early 80s, but they weren't event things. You know, you think of Jaws, for example. You know, Jaws is this big, oh my God, amazing movie, and then we're just going to make a second one. But, you know, guys, don't try too hard. Just, you know, and, you know, it's the same, again, The Omen is another example. You know, it's like, oh, big, epic film.
It was really more for horror movies.
Yeah.
Because they did have financial success. Yeah. Another one was seen profitable.
Yeah, but it wasn't about the quality of the film. It was just like, let's get something out. And for George, you know, again, in time in his life where, you know, he'd had the success of, you know, the first film and going into the next one, you know, I mean, now, look, say what you will about George as a director. This was a time when it's like, look, I'm ready to hand over the reins. I'm going to create the universe with the script and the production and financing the film. And he was lucky enough to get one of his old mentors from film school in Irvin Kershner, who, up to that stage, hadn't made anything like this. And really, you know, he had no experience with big practical effects because, again, you know, that it was a very new thing. Not only that, but, you know, at the time, he was, what, in his mid-60s, at least, from memory, a very aged and acclaimed filmmaker to come out of obscurity and to make this big, you know, sequel to one of the greatest films of all time. And, you know, again, as dangerous as a move as the original Star Wars was, you know, again, a film that was plagued with problems on the set, you know, production issues, sandstorms, you know, then this was an even bigger challenge because, you know, George Lucas funded this film on his own. You know, his earnings from the original film and the merchandising basically helped fund this film. And, you know, that, again, inspired other filmmakers in times to come. You know, again, you guys have mentioned, you know, without Star Wars, we wouldn't have certain filmmakers. And one of those filmmakers is Sir Ridley Scott. You know, after seeing the first film, he's like, damn, I need to do that. And he was lucky enough to go off and do Alien, which was met with great success, again, through the same studio. And then Empire is almost a reflection on what his next film after that would be with Blade Runner, which is, you know, again, Empire, regardless of the fact that it's financed, but, you know, it was released through a studio, was very independently funded, you know, it was very creator-centric, and that was the same deal with Blade Runner, you know, although Blade Runner at the time didn't meet the same success that Empire would have, you know, again, just smash. Again, you know, you've got that same influence happening on other filmmakers, and again, oh, look, what can we say about The Empire Strikes Back, but, you know, again, the genius of the Star Wars films is that each of them, you know, particularly the original three, they have their own look and they have their own feel, and you can kind of feel that in the mark of the different directors that worked on them, but still it's got the stamp of Lucas. You know, you can sit there and think, you know, yeah, they're still, he's helped craft them, but this director did this and that, and, you know, and one of them was removing that nice clean crispiness of the original film and giving it a bit of a roughy edge. You know, we're in the snow, we're out in Finland, and during production, they were boggled with snowstorms. You know, disagreements on set. You know, again, it's very similar problems that they had, but, you know, it's very gritty, it's nitty. And, you know, again, we're still following the same characters. And again, another, you know, I'm going to say this term quite a lot, the success of Star Wars, why people love it so much is something I forgot to mention just earlier, is that, yes, there's an abundance of characters. You know, there are characters out there that people love, and they're only in one scene, you know. Marcy here loves Bosk, and he first appeared in Empire Strikes Back in one scene. You know, Boba Fett, one of the biggest well-known characters in the whole thing, is barely in it, does nothing, you know, and when he does something, he gets his ass kicked. But, you know, the central characters, you know, we're following a small group, and that's why the current TV show Rebels is such a success, because you've got a small crew, if you will. Like, you know, they've got their ship, which is the Falcon. You've got your rogue, which is Han Solo. You've got your young hero, which is Skywalker, the, you know, the feisty female heroine with Leia, you know, and your goofy sidekicks. And that's a success because, you know, we're following a small bunch of people. But again, when we meet these characters again in Empire, it's not like what a lot of sequels do today where they'll spend forever re-explaining stuff and going back over stuff. This Star Wars, you know, again, the opening crawl gives us exactly what we need to know. Sure, there's been events that have happened in between the two films, but like in the original film, like with dropping of hints of, you know, certain characters' abilities and other things about their past, this film does that as well. You know, somehow, Darth Vader knows a little bit more about Luke Skywalker, be that between his own investigation, in between the events following the Death Star's destruction. You know, I mean, again, you know, he's a Sith Lord. He has his powers to deduct that stuff. So, you know, you can look to the expanded universe, you know, surely, obvious, with the exception of the expanded universe, like just ignoring that for a second, that was that Dark Horse helped create. Obviously, they would have had an encounter before because, you know, there's hints that they kind of know a bit more about one another. Obviously, you know, there's a bit more explanation of Force. You know, Ben's ghost obviously would have helped Luke discover that a little bit more. You know, his powers are growing. And like I mentioned earlier, you know, the trilogy as a whole is a hero's journey. You know, again, every film, like so Star Wars, Empire and Jedi, have their own story arc of the hero's journey. But the whole trilogy as a whole is one big journey, you know. So the first one is your first act. This is your second act. And, you know, any middle part of a hero's journey is the most troubling. That's when you've reached a certain high, you know. When we meet the rebels in this film, they're running. They're not, you know, they're not what they were doing in the original film. They had a plan of attack. They knew the weakness. Here they're on the run. And the time, you know, unlike a lot of sequels today, you know, for example, Revenge of the Fallen and a few things like that, you know, is it really a revenge or Age of Ultron? It's not really an age. It's more like a weekend. This was, the title rings true. The Empire Strikes Back. They strike back. They kick the rebels' butts. They fucking demolish them in the Battle of Hoth. And they do so towards the end of the film. And even though you can say that it's not really a happy ending in the end, you know. They still, the Empire still wins. But at the end, you know, this film just, again, people didn't have any expectations of what this film could be and what it could do. And it's immortal for the fact that that twist, you know. Okay, you've got the big, you know, again, we discover more about Darth Vader in this film. That's the important thing about The Empire Strikes Back. Darth Vader is explained a little bit more. Not in terms of, you know, here's my backstory and I'm going to over-explain everything. Just in the fact that we get to spend more time with him, we get to know the inner workings of the Imperial Navy a little bit more, like with the officers. You know, more in the first film, he was more of, you know, a sidekick in a way, even though he was the big bad still. But he was kind of, you know, Tarkin was the main villain. This time he's front and center, even though we do get a brief glimpse of the Emperor. He is a big bad, and the fact that he is, and I'm not going to apologize because honestly, if you haven't seen these films by now and know the plot twist in them, then you're lost. But it turns out, you know, Darth Vader is Luke Skywalker's father. And it is one of the most rawly emotional scenes ever. You know, it was shrouded in mystery, and Luke's reaction to know that this man that he hates, that he was told murdered his father, you know, he's told by his mentors, Darth Vader betrayed and murdered your father. He's cut his hand off, and he's just revealed, I'm your dad. And it's the greatest plot twist ever. I mean, I don't like calling it a twist. It's just a total head spin. It's just like one of those whoa moments. And it, hearing that for the first time, oh my God, it just, I flipped out. And I think following, you know, again, this was a Friday night on Channel 10 when I was watching this film, and I would rush of waiting for Monday to be like, oh my God, did you see that? Darth Vader is Luke's father. And again, it opens a whole other can of worms. You think this film's going to, oh yeah, things are going to be, how's he going to get out of this? But then, you know, a whole other thing to be explored. And it's just, again, it's just fantastic. I mean, look, I don't have a fact, you know, I won't say I like one more than another. I will say I have a personal favorite, but there's specific reasons for that. But this film is just bam. It, you know, people talk today about a sequel surpassing the original. This does, but still being very respectful of what has come before it. I mean, the only other film that I could think of that does this, like, with a sequel is, you know, The Raid 2 and even The Dark Knight. They're just, bam, on par with it. You know, we discover new things, and it's just, oh, excellent, excellent stuff. You know, first time we hear the Imperial March, it's just, oh, just such an awesome film. So, passing it along.
Another 3 hours later. Yeah, so, again, I watched this movie a lot growing up. This was my dad's favourite, and especially Battle of Hoth. He absolutely loved. He loved the at walkers, and, you know, I have fond memories of my dad, like, announcing himself in a room by doing the Imperial March, going, dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun, which is always funny. When your own father identifies himself as Darth Vader. That would make me Luke Skywalker or Princess Leia. I mean, wait, we don't know that yet. Yeah, but there's so much, like, great about this movie because it doesn't rehash the first movie at all, which is a trap a lot of sequels do. It gives us something completely new. You know, the Force and what a Jedi is, it's completely expanded. We learn so much more. This movie gives us the introduction of one of the most beloved and just one of the greatest characters in cinema, which is Yoda.
It'd be like it.
Yeah. And he's just fantastic. I mean, when you first meet him, you're like, what's this little shit doing there? And then it's like revealed, yes, he's this great Jedi master. He's going to train you. And it's like, whoa. Remember that kind of being like, whoa, that it just blew my mind.
It throws you too, because, you know, even though there's aliens and bizarre creatures and certain, you know, again, you've got people like Darth Vader, who's a guy in a suit, you know, guy in a big metal suit of sorts. Mm. And the stormtroopers, again, you don't believe they're real. And it takes you by shock by the fact that he's not human. You know, this is a time when people are like, you don't have to be a human to be a great character. You can be a weird little alien.
Yeah, he's an amazing work of puppetry.
Credit goes to Frank Oz, of course.
But, I mean, it's just, it's when he, like, lands, Luke is just in this really bad place as well. He's suffering a lot of things that, as I think we kind of get hinted at, that his father had suffered through. I don't know if I'm just thinking that's how
it's hinted at.
A lot of frustration, he doesn't have patience, he's suffering all these things that do lead to what we know as the dark side. So he's got a, you know, a big journey ahead of him, and he's kind of maybe a little unprepared for it because he's just been thrust into this whole thing. So he does have a really interesting journey, and for most of the movie he is really separated from the other characters who have their own journey to deal with. And we also get introduced to another wonderful character in Lando Calrissian.
Hello, what have we here?
And he's someone who we're definitely unsure about. Things have kind of been foreshadowed through the movie when they get to Cloud City, and we know something's just not good is going to happen. And previous to that, Darth Vader has dispatched the bounty hunters, and of course we get the 2 seconds of Boss just going, and he's like, got his no shoes on and everything, he's so cool. And just happens to be the most awesome alien bounty hunter ever. Sure. Yeah. There's nothing to say in the movie that he died.
No.
And wasn't unsuccessful, so shut up. For more on Boss, in something that is now canon, there is a little novel aimed at, you know, the younger audience that read Rebels. It's like a prequel to Rebels, but it deals with Ezra having to team up with Bosk to do some work on the Thal. So highly recommended. It was really good. That's kind of sidetracking. But it's so much, like, great. And I remember, like, kind of watching it originally and just with the twists and turns, just being completely mind-blown, but just having something so different as well. But as a kid, this movie didn't feel like it just ended on this big downer, even though it really does. And it's just interesting to watch this as a kid, but then as an adult, because I didn't love it as much as a kid. I really started loving it a lot more as an adult. I could appreciate so much more. Whereas as a kid, my most loved Star Wars is the one we're going to talk about next. But there's just so much you could say, and I think Chris already said it for us all, really, about The Empire Strikes Back. But it is a movie that it does surpass the original, but it also gives you the ingredients for an excellent sequel. It doesn't copy, it gives you something new, it expands the characters, it adds, you know, new and memorable characters, and it, you know, it really does seem really fresh. And unfortunately these days sequels just don't do that a lot.
No, and even if they do, it's too much. It's way too much. And you know, today every movie has to be 2.5 hours long,
and they're overly formulaic. Whereas this, you know, it should be a real blueprint for things, but yeah. Highly memorable. So many great moments. You know, towards the end, I mean, it's just harrowing with, you know, everything coming to a full circle with Han. Finally, his past has caught up with him, and that plays a role in using him to get to Luke. So everyone's kind of got this thing where it's like, yeah, it's perfect, we can, you know.
And it's really good too, we never needed to know, you know, the most we've ever known about Han and his past is, you know, in the first film when Greedo comes up to him and, you know, he owes this guy Jabba or Bead money, basically. But you don't need to for him to sit there and go, oh yeah, I was out on a space run and I had to drop my load. I mean, they mention it.
Drop your load.
Yes. They don't need to over-explain it. All you have to do is mention, you know, get scared when encountering Imperials. You know, you just have to give the simplest thing. And that's one of the first things he says at the beginning of Empire Strikes Back is, I have to leave, there's a bounty on my head. Yeah. You don't need to know why. It's like, okay, this guy's in shit.
He explains it. He was smuggling something for Jabba, and he dropped it because there was Imperial or whatever.
But it's not like...
You don't need half an hour of explanation for someone's backstory. You don't need
a flashback for it. And that's
just handled. It's handled properly. I mean, the dialogue in the first, it's not the best, but he manages to get his point across pretty well, pretty easily. And I'll say this about George Lucas. As far as developing ideas and stories and, you know, everything, he's such a smart guy. In my opinion, I don't think he's the greatest director. I think he's better doing the other stuff.
He knows that as well.
He knows that.
Because if you ever, and I suggest you do this, folks, go out and watch the special edition of, I don't know if it's on the Blu-ray because I haven't watched the Blu-ray special features, the special features for the original trilogy of Indiana Jones, particularly for the first film, The Raiders of the Lost Ark. And George is talking about the... This is just a brief sidetrack. George is talking about the snake pit scene when Indy has to go down into a pit full of asps. And George sits there and goes, that's the reason why I could never direct this movie, because I'm too lazy for something like that. And he knows it. He knows it. And that's why he's, you know, only done six films, you know, and big gaps in between. So, yeah. And he knows it. He'll know it. He knows it. That's why that's why he wants other people.
So, Bede, you can share your thoughts.
I guess, well, for me, with The Empire Strikes Back, I mean, what else can I add? I think both of you have pretty much summed it up, really. It's one of the greatest sequels of all time. Like, I'm still probably a bit partial to the first one, but I think, like you say, what's great about the sequel is that it does what all sequels should do, is sort of expand on the characters, but also in a way still continue on where the story left off, but at the same time do some different things, and so that it's not basically a carbon copy of what came before. And it's a film that sort of deals with so many interesting themes and ideas and all that, and there's an intelligence to them, because it's a very, as well, because like the first one is basically is, you know, kind of a big sci-fi fun, I mean, kind of epic film, and this one's definitely, while still all those at the same as well, but it's also a very mature film in a way that, like I say, it sort of deals with some darker subject matter and whatnot, and also introducing great new characters like Yoda and Lando Calrissian, and expanding on sort of elements that were sort of introduced in the first film, and sort of showing, making, putting them at the forefront in terms of plot and story in this one. And it's just, and it also ends on probably a great cliffhanger, and probably one of the great film twists of all time. Like, everyone knows the twists of this film, that Darth Vader is Luke's father. I mean, even somebody who has never seen the Star Wars films knows the twist to this one, but it still makes it a very effective nonetheless. And it's a twist that not only is it shocking, but it also drives the story as well. And of course, which we'll be talking about in the next one. So, yeah, I mean, Empire Strikes Back, just sort of fantastic film. Again, like the first film, one of the greatest films of all time, and one that's also very important as well. And it's just, what can I say? It's just sort of a fantastic film, fantastic sequel, and just all around awesome.
Moving right along now to the third chapter in the original trilogy. This one's a personal favorite of mine. And this is The Return of the Jedi. The reason why it is a personal favorite, because when I think back to when I first knew of Star Wars, even before seeing them, I remember seeing little hints, be it a reference to it in another cartoon or these other little things. And I sit there, you know, I remember seeing the scene from the original film of Luke and Leia swinging across the chasm. But in my brain, I thought it was an ad for a Robin Hood film, because, you know, one of the Robin Hood films have the exact same type of scene. But my first memory of Star Wars was with the Return of the Jedi. And back in the day of VHS tapes, when, you know, we had the glorious privilege of taping things on TV, I'd taped, you know, Ninja Turtle, the original sequel to Ninja Turtles, on VHS. And in one of the commercial breaks, there was an ad for Return of the Jedi when it was on back then. This wasn't when I first watched it, but this was, you know, one of the times it was on. And it was Return of the Jedi. And the single most scene I distinctly remember is Luke and Vader coming up to the throne room. And all you saw was the lights coming up for the lift approaching and the door opening, and they were standing there. And that image is still in there today, and it's really only recently that I've come out there and actually admitted and just been like, that was the moment. That was the moment that it took hold. And it's not only that, but Return of the Jedi is a very rare film. It's a rare film, the fact that, and it's what a lot of third films should be, and they kind of are, but a lot of third films in a trilogy
try to do this, but they overclose. They just overdo it a bit. This is an actual closer. This closes a story. This brings, you know, forget what's happened, you know, The Force Awakens. This, at the time, this was the end. This was the end of Luke's journey. And, you know, even now you can say that was the end of one stage of his journey, you know, the path of him becoming a Jedi. And that's what the story was. That's the story of Star Wars. The story of Star Wars is the journey of Luke Skywalker, coming from farm boy of Tatooine to Jedi, to accomplish rebel pilot to commander to Jedi Knight. And that happens in this film. And I feel so sorry for this film because particularly, you know, so many people were in love with Empire Strikes Back that it's like, yeah, nothing can, you know, people can say nothing could surpass Star Wars, but it did, you know, Empire did that. But then people will say nothing can beat Empire and they will stick to that rule, which I think is very unfair on films like this because there's at least one other trilogy that I, in my opinion, that has done what Star Wars has done, which is, you know, bring the story full circle. There is two, and my opinion's on, well, there are two other trilogies, to be honest. The first is Chris Nolan's Dark Knight trilogy. That brings the story of his Bruce Wayne to full circle. You know, the events of the third film, you know, are brought up back, and it's, you know, it's a big bombastic ending, and it's the same situation. The Dark Knight was such a big film that nobody thought or cared about anything surpassing it. They loved the fact that there was another one, but it's like, yeah, no. Heath Ledger, blah, 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 blah. He's great. The other trilogy that had the same problem is the Godfather films. Now, the Godfather, I'm going to openly admit this, even though someone's going to probably whack me for this. I love Part 3. I think Part 3 is one of the best films of the three. It's, again, it's a personal favourite for many different reasons. It's the only one of the three that made me cry for good reasons. You know, the final scene at the end is just heartbreaking. And again, it suffered from the same problem. You know, you had a sequel that not only surpassed the original, but was put on a pedestal that everyone was like, you know what, who cares? It doesn't matter how well received the next one will be, it still won't be as great. And Return of the Jedi is very, very lucky because it didn't have the same problems that the other films had. There was no production delays. There was no storms, no set. You know, I mean, yeah, it had its own issues that people will query about, and that mostly has to do with the choice of director. And I think a lot of those people, you know, need to calm their tits. Richard Marquand, you know, he was, again, a very bizarre pick. I mean, more bizarre than Irvin Kershner. I mean, Richard Marquand, who the hell was he? He was some Welsh director that had made a couple of thrillers and TV shows and TV movies, came out of nowhere to do this film, and he did a fantastic job. He got to not only direct, you know, the vital chapter in the saga, a challenge that Colin Trevorrow has with the new trilogy, and he's the perfect man for it, but he got to direct the most emotional of, like, you know, Empire has real emotion, raw emotion, but, you know, really every now and then. But it's a little different to this. This is because Jedi, things have changed, you know. Things have changed after the events of Empire. Luke knows that Vader is his father. So their interaction is a lot different. And the way they interact in their few scenes together, particularly before Vader takes Luke to the Emperor, is gut-wrenching to watch. Because you're looking, you know, Vader is a man wearing a mask. But you know, deep inside there is a man. And Luke makes that point. He makes the point that there is a man behind the mask. He used to be my father. And you can see, even though you can't see his face, you know it's tearing Vader up. And not only, you know, not only did Marquand get to direct fantastic scenes like that, he got to direct one of the best performance from an actor in the entire Star Wars franchise. And that is Ian McDiarmid as the Emperor. Oh my God. That guy looks like he's not even wearing makeup. It's, you know, we've in the first film, we only ever heard of who the Emperor was. In the second one, we got to see the Emperor, but it was very shadowy and, you know, it was an old lady with a chimp's eye and somebody else's voice, and it was very shadowy. So, you know, it was almost like a projected image, you know, how the Emperor wants to be seen or something. So it's still very shadowy, but here we got to see him. And this was the right time to introduce the villain of the Star Wars trilogy. A lot of films have their bit, like, you know, the Transformers trilogy, the Pirates of the Caribbean. They have their villain, their big baddies throughout the whole thing, and they die and they come back, and they die and they come back. This saved the big baddie for the very end. And it's, oh, he has some of the best dialogue, and the way his voice is just pure evil and pure delight. And to see him with Vader, you know, Vader has gone from the big bad of the previous two films to, you know, taking a very different role. You know, he now has a journey of his own to decide, well, am I gonna stick with this guy, or am I gonna, you know, be a father to my son? And again, this film has its own twists and turns that, you know, people weren't expecting, but, you know, at the same time, they didn't shock them as much. You know, the revelation that Leia is actually Luke's twin sister, which blows a lot of people's minds, considering that she kissed him in the first one and then she made out with him in the second one. But, you know, they didn't know. And it's just, you know, it's a real closer in not only the fact that characters are dying, but there's a real threat that people could die. I mean, I know in the production, you know, Harrison Ford told them, I want Han to die. He wanted Han to die, which was, you know, a mistake to make, but they kept him, you know, it was a mistake to kill him off because, you know, people would have turned off if it was him. You know, they're rescuing him at the start, and he is not really the hero anymore. He's taken a step back in that role, and even towards the end of the film, you know, he's still taking a step back, you know, of being the role. He's become someone responsible. You know, Luke is finally kind of coming front and center, even though, you know, he is the hero of the story, but this is him taking his role as the hero to decide where he fits in this place, you know, and the pinnacle point is that decision to let go of his anger and just accept that he is at one with the Force. And that is displayed in one of the most heartbreaking scenes. It tears me up. This is the only Star Wars fight, you know, the Star Wars films will bring me tears of joy. This is where I will blubber like a baby, because my heart is breaking. You know, the scene in the final duel between Luke and Vader, where, you know, Vader is still trying to be so sinister and tempt Luke to the dark side by discovering for himself that Leia is his sister and threatening, oh, if you're not going to turn, then perhaps she will. And that breaks Luke. It breaks him to the point of pure rage that he goes after his father, you know, blind fury. And he cuts his father's hand off. And in a strange revelation, looking down at his father's hand, he looks at his own hand. And he's like, oh, my God, what's going on here? You know, because in the previous film, he's lost his hand. He's got a robotic hand. And it's like, this is just one step to becoming, you know, my father, you know. And the Emperor comes out and he realizes, no, you've lost. And what follows is just, you know, pure horrificness with the Emperor just finally, you know, he's been adamant in pursuing Skywalker to become his next apprentice. You know, he wants to replace Vader with someone younger and, you know, more pure, someone who, despite one appendage, isn't 90% a robot in a way, as Obi-Wan describes in dialogue. He goes, he's more machine now than man. So it's like, you can't really reason with him. Luke found a way. And that is the fact that he was his son. And in that moment when the Emperor is killing him with these lightning, you know, he is begging his father. He's turning to his father. And this is the first time ever that Vader, you know, gets to see his son in real pain. Real constant pain that you know, he's kind of put him there by bringing him there. Yes, he chopped his hand off, but this is just pure torture. This isn't just the instant of chopping a hand off. This is constant death by electrocution, which is just horrible to watch. And it's the fact that he is watching him squirm there, that he's had enough, and he picks up the Emperor and throws him off. It's just, you know, like I said, mentioned it just before, you know, it's a film that, you know, certain characters are killed off in this. You know, you have Yoda suddenly become very ill and he dies. And it's heartbreaking. And a lot of people are like, oh, yeah, you know, they've got to tie it up. But it makes sense, you know, because Luke has lost everyone in his life. He doesn't have a memory of his mother. He's lost his aunt and uncle. He's only just discovered he's got a sister. He's lost his great mentors who he barely got to spend much time with as they were alive. And now he's meeting his real father for the first time, you know. The only interaction he has with his father is when he's dying. And the death, like when he peels off, this is a gut-wrenching moment, more so than, you know, anything before. The moment Luke tears off, and I'll say tear because you can feel the mask coming off. When that comes off, Darth Vader dies. And I'm not just saying the body of the character, I'm saying the name, because it was a name, it was a name bestowed on Anakin Skywalker by the Emperor. And it was represented in the body, the mask, the cape, the breathing. And the moment he peels that face off, you feel him die and any evil is gone. And there is this sad old man and he is good and he loves his son and he's able to share, you know, the briefest of moments with his son. And, you know, he finally is at one. And in a way, it's not only coming full circle for Luke Skywalker, it's coming full circle for Anakin. Because, you know, someone who's, you know, living in a mask, pure evil, you know, having nothing but hate, for that brief moment to just come back to the light side and find happiness and, you know, die in his son's arms. And it renaissances with me very, very much so, because, to be honest, I don't have the greatest relationship with my parents, my father in particular, and my mother. Oh, well, they're both equally as bad. Even as a young child, you know, I still felt very ostracized. And that's why I really identify a lot with Luke and Vader, you know, this lost soul that's just an orphan in a strange way. And I look there and I think, you know, it renaissance with me, because it's like that brief moment he has with his father. It's like, I wish I could have had something like that, you know, a moment where I could share of a real click with a family member, and it hasn't and it will never happen. And again, the power of Star Wars is that it can renaissance, it can cut through to the core to me. In particular, this film is so special to me, and it's just amazing. It's got some of the most iconic, like, well, they're all got iconic scenes in them, but the image, it, like, particularly of Vader's funeral is just one of my all-time favorites, and I almost tear up. I'll pass that along before I get a bit more emotional.
Another 10 hours late. No, just teasing you, Chris.
That's okay. Sorry, guys. I have
he rambles, but yeah.
I have
So, growing up, this one was my absolute favourite. And I think not as serious in tone for a lot of the movie, in, you know, the first two acts as the others. There's a bit more light side to it, but, and again, it's a different adventure. It's not a copy of what we've seen, and things do come full circle, but I think a lot of the fun of going back to Bede's palace, how they're gonna, you know, save Han, get out, and then, you know, the next bit, it's like they've got another thing to do. and you know, then they go to the Ewok planet. Forgotten the name for Endor. A second. That's it. Wookiees don't live on Endor. And all that fun and adventure, and I, just as a kid, Ewoks were the best thing ever. I wanted like 10 Ewoks. I wanted them all around. I needed to have Ewoks. They were the cutest, most cuddliest things, and they were badass.
I don't care what anybody says. I think they're fantastic. They're fantastic characters. Yeah.
They're pretty cool.
They are.
Yeah, so Ewoks were just like the coolest thing ever. And it saddened and broke my heart when I heard people like hated them and thought they were annoying, because they were just so cute and fun. And I loved that they had these, the natives to the planet helping them battle, like the troopers. And they were using like their primitive tools, which was no match for troopers who got no aim. And I loved Chewie.
Except that one.
And I love Chewie, like, you know, teaming up with them. It's so cute. It's fun. I love watching it now. There's just so much that I really adore about it. But what also really got to me, too, when I was younger was Luke's story with Vader. The realization that it's his father. He, you know, works out Leia's actually his sister. The separation of the twins when they were really young. And just trying to get all those little interesting tidbits, like learning Vader was once Anakin Skywalker and how he turned to the dark side. And I remember, like, even too, reading the novelizations and getting more info, because I was just really interested in the past and how things like that had manifested. And I think I remember as a kid thinking, wow, there's episodes 4, 5, and 6, but where are the other three? And I thought maybe, like, I just hadn't seen them or something. It wasn't until getting a bit older that you learn, oh, they're not made yet, but he's actually working on it. Oh, wow, that's so exciting. I'd love to see that story, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, that's all for the next show. But all their interactions and the fact that they're trying to turn Luke, and the Emperor is just this asshole of a man who's the real guy pulling all the strings. And I love all the moments with Luke and Vader and the confrontation, but then the realization that there is still good in Vader and he's not going to die being a dark, you know, being the Dark Lord, he's going to be a father. So the last moment between him and Luke is really touching. And when he gets to actually see him and tell him, you know, you were right about me. I mean, it's a really touching moment, and it really comes full circle. And I love the little celebration at the end. It's fun. And yes, when I was younger, the fourth ghost, it was Sebastian Shaw. I think it's a bit weird that he did change it, but I guess that's just a way to tie in the prequels as well.
Because a lot, again, it's the fact that, I mean, the more recent updates from 2004, like, you know, they are the time of the prequels, because the people that are watching them now would have watched the prequels first.
They'd be more familiar with it, yeah.
Or the Clone Wars, you know, the younger people will have not watched these films.
There's not much else I can really say about the movie other than, like the other two, I watched it all the time, probably this one more than the other two, because as a kid, it was my favorite. I just loved it so much. And I think it just offered me so much. And I think when we saw The Dark Knight Rises, I said that film trilogy really kind of mirrors the Star Wars trilogy. And I think that's kind of the best an analogy of them as well.
Not purposely, yeah. Nolan never went out there to say, I'm going to make a trilogy, because
it just kind of feels that way in a strange way. I think they very much mirror themselves a lot.
Yeah, because, again, like with George Lucas, he never intended to go out there and make 3 films. Well, in the end, 6 films. His intention was to go out there and make 1 fantastic film, and Nolan did that with Batman Begins. He went out there to make 1 fantastic film. He put in that little kicker in there, which only one other film has done that successful, that they all, was intended to just be an end of film kicker, but people were like, why don't you do a sequel? And that is Back to the Future, with that ending. And, you know, the rest is history. You know, Nolan made the other two. So, like what you said, yeah, it's not purposely, but it's the only other perfect trilogy out there.
Yeah.
I mean, I will say The Godfather as well in terms of full circle, but only because I like the third film.
One of the only people.
One of the only people, and I will actually just say I dislike the second one. With the exception of Bobby De Niro.
Controversial. Bede, would you like to say your piece about this?
What is this for? You'll die, Jedi. God,
we've got the heart and salacious crumb.
Oh, can you imagine if they did like a laughing like opposition?
Let
the hate do.
Well, no hate will flow through me when I talk about Return of the Jedi. But yeah, I love Return of the Jedi. I think as much as I do love all three films equally, I think Return of the Jedi does have a special place in my heart. And maybe in a way, it's probably my personal favorite of the three. Because I do, like Marcy, I used to watch, I think of the three films, I used to watch this one the most when I was a kid. And to me, like, I know some people kind of wish it was kind of more back to the darker elements of Empire Strikes Back. But to me, that kind of is, again, Return of the Jedi does like Empire does. It kind of goes a completely different direction with its story and tone and whatnot. And to me, in a way, it just goes back to having the fun adventure aspects of the first film, but also having that sort of darker elements of Empire with Luke Skywalker, Darth Vader, and the Emperor. Like, to me, and it's funny though, is like looking back on the film now, it's pretty much just like really these kind of really two long kind of big epic set pieces, because you got the first act, which is set entirely in Jabba's palace. Then you have sort of these kind of mini scenes in between, like Luke going back to Dagobah to meet Yoda, and then you got the entire rest of the film, which is basically just the final battle against the Empire. And to me, that's what I kind of love about sort of the structure of the film. But most importantly, it's just a huge amount of fun. Like, there's so, like, again, like the pre-films, there's so many great moments, great characters, whether the particularly new ones, and also some fantastic scenes and dialogue. And to me, and also it brings a satisfying conclusion to the series. And to me, that's what I think is more important when it comes to any type of film series, is that if they end the series on, even if the final installment, maybe not quite on the level of what came before, but if it sort of sends the series out on sort of a conclusion that both makes sense of where the story should go, or where the story should end, I should say, and it does it in a way that's satisfying and sort of bring sort of the story full circle. And to me, that's when a final film has done its job and has completely succeeded at what it's doing. And to me, Return of the Jedi completely does that. And it is a film that has always just stuck with me ever since I was a kid. I love every single thing about this film. There's just so much great things in it, and it's just fantastic. Like I said, it's, I mean, you two pretty much have already sort of summed up everything about Return of the Jedi, so I'm not going to sort of really add too much more, but to me, it's just a great third and final film of the series, and it just sends the series out on an epic note, and it's just fantastic. Like, it's just, and there's a lot of reasons why it is, you know, my personal favorite of the three films. But it's just, but that again would be an entire episode all to itself. But it's just an awesome film, a great and third and final chapter, and of course, you know, screw the haters, I like the Ewoks as well. So, but
them a lot more because they worship the all-time favorite character. So, you know.
Of course.
No, they worship
Me.
Oh, sorry.
The creepy Marcy.
Yeah.
Although I have to say, though, like, if there are two things I have to say, like, number one, when the special edition versions came out, they added this new scene where Boba Fett is basically acting like a total pimp. Then, you know, that's...
Yeah, with the chicks in the background.
Yes, that is an awesome scene. It's a little moment, but it's pretty awesome. Although, if I have to say, though, and I know... And if there's... Like, I've never had any problems with any of the changes in any of the special editions or updated versions of the films. Like, I've never had any problem with them, except for one thing, and that's in this film, and that, of course, is when they kind of... added Hayden Christensen into the sort of the final bit with Yoda and Obi-Wan. Like, I understand what George Lucas was going for with that. I completely understand. But to me, it kind of just feels... It just, to me, it just doesn't make that much sense. And it feels kind of too much to a slap in the face to the original actor, Sebastian Shaw. And I... But, you know, that's just me... personally, and I know some people out there feel the same way as well, but I don't know, it just that kind of irked me that moment.
It's a weird thing to just throw in there, because, you know, consider, I mean, there is a very good purpose for it being in there, but like you say, it's, you know, George Lucas doesn't have a very good history with any of the actors that played Darth Vader, with the exception of James Earl Jones. He did treat them rather poorly, you know, David Prowse in particular. And that's the one, you know, regardless of what I say about George Lucas being a wonderful, wonderful person, you know, again, I've never met him, but I think he's a wonderful person. The one thing that I just feel so sad about him doing is his treatment of David Prowse. You know, to keep him in the dark and just tell him that this film was not going to be a success and all of that, and particularly Jedi, that comment was, but... again, with Sebastian Shaw, you know, he said he was finally going to, David Prowse was finally going to get a chance to see his face, and then he went behind his back and got Sebastian Stan. And even though Sebastian Stan is no longer with us, Sebastian Shaw, gee.
That's a completely different actor, Chris. Sorry. You have failed as an Star Wars fan.
I know, shoot me now. Sorry, yeah. My deepest, and I did this not long ago with one of my favourite filmmakers, I said his last name wrong. I deeply apologize, Mr. Shaw, from beyond. Let me retake that. You know, he did get Sebastian Shaw to take over the unmasking scene, and, you know, to be Anakin Skywalker. But as you say, Bede, when he made that change, it does feel like a slap in the face to that actor. I mean, yes, he's no longer with us, for him to sit there and go, oh, wow, they took me out. But, you know, I mean, it's cringeworthy, but it's still, you know, like I said, we're not here to really cripe and whinge, but, you know, it's just one of those things that it's like, it does feel awkward, you know, even if it was in there originally, but yeah.
And what about you, Marcy? How do you feel about that?
I think the reason they did it is to kind of just tie into the prequels a bit more, but I personally, I wouldn't have changed it.
Yeah, I mean, look, there's nothing wrong. I mean, Lucas knows his audience is enough. You know, he knows that the audience at that stage, when they've watched these films, will be like, you know, a lot of them are not smart enough or old enough to really click. You know, they need to see the same person. That's why, you know, despite the fact that they changed so many actors, this and that, you know, it's, I think a good example, sorry, I'm kind of muddled my words there, but a good example would be, like what Marvel did with Nick Fury. They've completely changed that character so that if a kid today was to look at, be it the old, David Hasselhoff movie or any of the original comic books from the 40s, you know, that came beforehand, and they would just sit there and look and say, that's not Nick Fury. And an older person like myself would say, yeah, I'm sorry, but that is Nick Fury. You know, it's to them in their mind, they're used to someone in that role, and to them that's that. So to put even an old man as Anakin, even though, you know, Obi-Wan's an old man, people can kind of get that because Ewan McGregor, his look evolved over the three films. And I know we're breaching into the prequels a little bit here when we're going to be doing that next, but it's almost just kind of justifying something. It's just kind of just tipping off where those films went, because people have got to remember these three came, even though, you know, it wasn't until Empire Strikes Back that we discovered, oh, there's an episode 5. So these were the stories of after another event to come, you know, so we still had another trilogy to come. So it's a way of bouncing off from that into what we're going to be discussing next time. You know, so the audiences today have, because so many kids, even if they, you know, there's a lot of kids that, again, weren't old enough when the prequels came out. I know most kids that, younger kids that are into Star Wars now, are kids that I don't think would have even watched the prequels. They would have watched the Clone Wars TV show and Rebels, and maybe their parents have showed them the originals. But again, you know, Anakin in the Clone Wars is that Hayden Christian type model. So it just makes sense to a third gen or fourth gen fan that, you know, it would work. But it's just it's a bit of a slap in the face to, you know, as I said, George Lucas's relationship with the actors who have played Darth Vader, in particular Sebastian Shaw and David Prowse. But yeah, so I mean, any other final thoughts we have? Just, you know, summing up on what Star Wars is to you guys, just, you know, apart from it's freaking awesome.
Oh, it's freaking awesome. That's pretty much all you need to say.
There we go. Look, thanks guys for listening. You know, I'm glad you could tolerate my rambling. As I said, this is a series that means so much to me. Not just as a trilogy, but as a saga. And I'll be going into that a little bit more when we discuss the prequels in our next video. But look, just love them. You know, my message to anybody that's Star Wars fan, new or old, just, and I'm going to say this again in our next podcast, just love them. Just love them for what they are and what they have been and what they will be and what is to come. I know that's an area for another area of discussion in terms of what is to come, because a few people know my opinions, particularly with the plans for spin-off films. I think one idea is really great, but the rest are like, oh, we already know that. But again, we can discuss that at a later time. But look, just love them. You know, they created so many special memories. Don't tarnish your childhood by being a whiner and a complainer and someone who's going to be like, oh God, they screwed this up by doing that and blah, blah, blah. The power of Star Wars is to just let it into your heart and love it.
Put a little love in your heart. Sorry.
and I've done that. And I mean, it's affected my life in so many ways. You know, I lost so much in terms of social lives and all of that, but I don't care, because it gave me something very special. It gave me something very emotional, you know, never meeting these people and all of that. But it's just this, the power, you know, the power of the Force is just so strong. So just love it. And, you know, just be privileged to be a part of something that is so great and so beloved. And I'm going to stop myself now because I'm going into old man rambling phase. But thanks for listening. We got 11 days left till The Force Awakens. So, you know, muster up as much Star Wars stuff as you can, be it watching Rebels, the Clone Wars, the prequels, the trilogies, the video games.
Well, there's lots.
There's so much out there.
You can go to the old expanded universe and enjoy what they had done. You can look into the new expanded universe. Yeah. I mean,
it's all good. And
so look, for me, growing up, Star Wars was everything. I mean, it wasn't really until so much later when we're kind of starting to go online and chat to people that I even realized people disliked things about Star Wars.
Yeah.
I didn't realize people hated Ewoks, they hated 3PO, and even going into the prequels, that Jar Jar was this hated thing, that people hated the Phantom Menace. I mean, I'm like, how can people hate this stuff? Yeah. How can you complain about anything? I didn't even realize there was the Han shot first thing, because to me, I'd always viewed it as they were shooting at each other, and Han got the upper hand. To me, it's like a Western scene.
I still see it that way now, and I mean, in a lot of those old Westerns where, you know, that thing happens particularly...
I mean, the hero has to be ruthless. Yeah. There's nothing wrong with that, and I can understand George Lucas wanting to have these things be good role models, appeal to kids. But you know what? We used to live in an age where PC didn't freaking exist.
And people have got to remember, too, Han still reaches for his gun. Yeah. They specifically, the camera closes up on his blaster, and he's reaching for it. So no matter what was going to be changed or whatever, you know, he was still going to kill Greedo. It's not like all of a sudden, oh, I stunned him.
Yeah, no. He's a killer. They
kill mindless drones of poor stormtroopers, so, you know.
Yeah.
But, look.
I don't know. I was going to say, and now we know that they're people. No.
And, well, not clones, but that's a topic for another time.
Mm.
Again,
we've rambled on way too much.
My apologies.
Especially Christopher.
Using
his dark forces.
My dark powers of the Sith. But thanks for listening, guys. Look, like I said, get out there. Just enjoy it for what it is. Enjoy these last week, these last days, basically, of this 3-year build-up to a new film and a new
enjoy
saga.
The anticipation and just enjoy the movie. Stop trying to find fault with everything.
Yeah, and stop trying to find out...
Fanboys piss me off!
Stop trying to look for any secrets. You know, don't whinge about Luke not being in trailers. He's in there. And if you were smart enough to listen to JJ back at the start of the year, he told you all the stuff that you're asking about now. And it's like, oh. So grow a brain.
It's just getting ridiculous.
So look, anyway. Just get out there, enjoy it. Where can we find you guys on the intranet?
You can always look us up at supermarcy.com. You can look us up at facebook.com/sm.com/podcast. You can follow my Twitter account at twitter.com/supermarcy. If you so dare, you can look up the new Twitter accounts that Bede and I are currently running. You can look up Awkward Film Pauses or at Awkward Pauses 1. And it's all about pausing the movie and there being like a really awkward look. We've got some really funny ones on the page so far. And if you want, you can laugh at the hilarity that is Russian dating pics or at Russian profiles, where we pretty much just show you the awesome pictures from Russian dating websites and give them a little caption. And just know it's to be funny. We're not out to offend anyone. It's just for fun, so don't take it seriously.
Yes.
And that's it for now. Bede.
You can find me at my Twitter page at twitter.com/BedeJamine, or my Facebook page at facebook.com/BedeJamine, or my fan page at facebook.com/TerribleAussie. And, of course, you can find my weekly writings at supermarcy.com. So... I have a lot more stuff coming up over the next few days, a couple more video reviews that I'm way behind on, so keep a lookout for those.
Yeah,
I've got a
whole bunch to do as well.
We'll have to combine forces. Sorry. Go ahead, Chris.
And sadly, you won't probably find much of me on the internet, being as busy as I am, but just in terms of avoiding in the build-up to this film and just wanting to enjoy the ride. But if you do find me, you'll find me on my Facebook, really pretty much my Facebook page, where I'll just, every day I put up a new picture and I just count down the day. So if you can tolerate me counting down the days until The Force Awakens, then you. But
that's it.
Again, thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening, guys.
And may the Force be with you.
And also with you.
Always.